You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For many years, Washington lobbyist Jack Abramoff enjoyed a successful career as a political operative and K Street tycoon, and as one of the key figures in a Republican movement established to root out what they depicted as the corruption and vice of an entrenched Democratic Party. And everything went very well for him for a while. The latest documentary from Oscar-winning filmmaker Alex Gibney is Casino Jack and the United States of Money. He joins us now, along with former Congressman, now talk show host Bob Ney, the only lawmaker to go to jail as a result of the Abramoff scandal. The film opens this Friday at the Lincoln Plaza and Sunshine Cinemas, and I'm very pleased to welcome Alex Gibney and Bob Ney to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
Great. How are
Good
you?
To be here.
Alex, don't you have a number of new movies coming out about Lance Armstrong, Ken Kesey and the Merry Pranksters? There's one about Elliot Spitzer that's being shown at the Tribeca Film Festival. Is there anything that ties them together?
I don't know. That's for you to tell me. I just make them.
Oh, well, what is it about these things that grab you? For example, what is it? Did you feel there was something that wasn't being told about the Abramoff scandal that needed to be told?
I think so. I mean, it was a wild story that when it's condensed it is something out of a kind of an action spy thriller. But I think the other thing that wasn't properly told, at least in recent days, was this idea of, you know, I think a lot of people looked at Jack Abramoff as the bad guy. And yes, he committed crimes. He's in prison. But, you know, as if he was the one bad guy, you know, the bad apple. And I think my view was that he was more spectacular evidence that the barrel was rotten.
What was he convicted of?
He was convicted of conspiracy to I'm going to get this wrong now. Part of it was a honest services fraud. He was also convicted for financial fraud in relation to trying to purchase a gambling casino operation in Florida. And they had him on so many possible charges that it was
the wire, you know, wire. Anytime you use a BlackBerry today, don't use a BlackBerry.
Wire fraud.
That's wire fraud.
In fact,
right.
One of the lessons of this film is
BlackBerry.
Right. Don't do it in email.
Yeah, don't send anything in email.
Right.
Throw them away. Throw the BlackBerries away.
Now, is it the things that he was convicted for, is this kind of like when they sent Al Capone to jail for tax evasion? Could there have been other things?
Yeah, I think there could have been. I'm told that one of the issues for him when he was confronted by federal prosecutors was, pal, we've got you on a lot of stuff. Where do you want us to go? And it was that led him, I believe, to plead guilty. I mean, because he didn't go to trial. He pled guilty to a number of crimes.
How did he get the nickname Casino Jack?
Well, in part because his dad was involved in the casino business in Atlantic City. And also, look, a lot of his core business was casinos. A lot of his big clients were Indian tribes who had casinos.
Did people in Washington call him Casino Jack?
No, I think Alex has codified, as we say in Congress, Casino Jack. He has codified it.
Well, tell us about his background. You say he grew up, his father was in the casino business.
Well, he was briefly, and then he was an executive, I believe, for American Express. He took Jack out to Beverly Hills. In his formative years, Jack grew up in Beverly Hills, went to Beverly Hills High School. At the age of 14, he converted. Well, he not converted, but he became Orthodox after he watched Fiddler on the Roof. Jack was an inveterate film buff, and I think in some ways lived his life as a kind of movie. So that was appealing to me as well.
Didn't he know that people in Beverly Hills are accused of all being very liberal?
Yeah. Well, Jack ruddered in exactly the opposite direction. That may have been his adolescent rebellion.
He joined the College Republicans, and you suggest that they were radicals. We're talking about Karl Rove, Ralph Reed, Groffen Norquist, and anyone else?
Those would be the key four. And in a way, you know, with Jack, the key two people for him were Ralph Reed and Grover Norquist. He was very close friends with them. And they came up with the Ronald Reagan Revolution. But they saw themselves really as true radicals who were going to help bring down the Soviet state and also sort of almost like revolutionaries, I think.
One of the side pleasures of watching this film is seeing pictures of them when they were very young. I would not be able to identify the young Karl Rove from the the photos, but Ralph Reed looks almost exactly the same.
Ralph Reed hasn't changed. Carl had long hair, parted in the middle, and a 28-inch waist. Right.
Now, people in the film describe them as paranoid anti-communists who like to quote Patton. Paranoid anti-communists?
Indeed. I mean, you know, they were very much, they held what I would have to call a right-wing Woodstock in Angola, which was hosted by the bloodthirsty dictator Jonas Savimbi.
Well, didn't they know that Jonas Savimbi had been a member of the Portuguese Communist Party and then was trained in guerrilla tactics in Mao's China?
Well, I think they may have known it, but they may have conveniently overlooked it, as they overlooked so many things that were inconvenient to them. I think that at some point, Jonas Savimbi got religion when he knew that he was going to get money from apartheid South Africa to continue to conduct his revolution.
Bob, where were you politically at this point? Were you even involved with politics when these guys were doing what they were doing?
I was actually chairman of the Ohio College Republicans in 1975, met Karl Rove when he was national chairman. So I've known, I knew who Abramoff was, but I really didn't, I couldn't have picked him out from a crowd. But Karl Rove I knew, and I attended events.
Did you spot him as somebody who might be able to help strategize?
30 years before, we all knew that he and Lee Atwater were going somewhere, and they went up to Arkansas and got Carl elected in an election that should have never have happened. And he was just a very young, aggressive person. So I've known Karl Rove forever.
Alex, your film talks about true believers, both religious and political. What were some of the things Abramoff and his fellow college Republicans did as true believers?
Well, what they were great at, like I said, they did mount this big kind of, it was kind of a right-wing Woodstock where they brought together freedom fighters from around the world, the Contras from Nicaragua, the Mujahideen from Afghanistan, and the idea was that they were going to shoot rifles together and pave the way for, mounting attacks on the Soviet Union from every front all over the world. So that was one thing. I think they were also very much early on anti-government radicals. I mean, Carl Grover Norquist always said that he'd like to get government so small that he could sneak it into the bathtub and drown it in the bathtub. And that was his vision of government.
And then he supported President Bush, who expanded government. In fact, didn't the vice president suggest that we should have an imperial government? So how did these guys work? Was that ever discussed in Congress, Bob?
With the
you have people saying certain things, and then the government moving in a totally different direction.
Yes, I got there in 1995, the Contract with America class, and of course the whole we were going to sell off house buildings, we were going to sell HUD. Nobody wanted to buy it, but we were going to sell HUD and do
all
these
things. I saw that movie, HUD.
that was the HUD that worked. And but we were going to do all these things, but then slowly but surely, especially under the previous President Bush, it just went haywire, and the spending rolled.
And I think what was it that Emerson said? A simple consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. I think they saw it that way. It's like, you know, they went wherever the money went. And I think that was what was really interesting. Ultimately, that's what the Bush presidency was all about. It was about looting, really.
My guests are Alex Gibney, who has a whole bunch of films coming out in the next month or so. The one that is opening this Friday is called Casino Jack in the United States of Money. He's here along with Bob Ney, former Republican representative from Ohio. One of the people who turned up in the film, I was kind of surprised to see him, was Thomas Frank, who I think of as a liberal. He wrote The Wrecking Crew, and he wrote whatever. What Happened to Kansas?
Right.
But he comes across as something as the kid brother of these college Republican operatives, including Abramoff.
Well, at first, I mean, he started out as a college Republican. I mean, he was that's where he started from. I mean, I think by the end, meaning today, he's moved in a very different political direction. But his book, The Wrecking Crew, was interesting because he spent a lot of time looking at Abramoff and really doing some pretty good detective work, but also having a kind of peculiar kind of love-hate relationship with Jack, which was interesting to me.
Abramoff becomes a film producer before he becomes a lobbyist. That's a transition that's interesting.
It sure was, and I think he's deeply conflicted. I mean, Jack was a lot of different people all in the same person. And I think there was a part of him that wanted to be a propagandist, and there was a part of him that really wanted to be a kind of Cecil B. DeMille, a movie producer. Well, he combined both in a movie called Red Scorpion, starring Dolph Lundgren, who some of us may remember from one of the Rocky films. But it was just a terrible movie, but it attempted to rehabilitate Jonas Savimbi. But one of the great things in terms of Jack's personal life is it contains the only action scene I'm aware of in which there's a heroic weightlifting maneuver. And that's because Jack in high school had been a weightlifter. So Dolph Lundgren weightlifts a Jeep out of a ditch and hooray, Savimbi's in power.
Did the movie lose a lot of money?
I'm told it actually made a profit. Now, I don't know if that's so. I'm also told that there was a great deal of subsidies from the apartheid South African government. That may have helped them keep production costs low.
And then he gives up because the movie is not a success and moves into lobbying. He joins Preston Gates and Ellis.
Well, he did make one other movie. There was Red Scorpion 2. That's as famous as Red Scorpion 1 is. Red Scorpion 2, you know, didn't really make anybody's best 10 list. But in 1994, at the same time that that Bob came to Washington, so did Jack. There was a moment when suddenly his two really close friends, Grover Norquist and Ralph Reed, were right at the right hand of Newt Gingrich, who had the contract with America. And that was a moment for Jack to kind of use his movie producer skills in another way, which was to become a lobbyist.
He also, as a result, came in contact with another important figure in Washington, Tom the Hammer DeLay.
Well, that was the key relationship for Jack, because ultimately what happened was it was kind of mutual marketing relationship. Tom DeLay allowed Jack, for his business, to market DeLay and to say, you know, you can go out and sell access to me. Say that people have to pay you if they want to get to me. And that's how Jack developed his business model.
Now, Bob, there are a lot of people in Congress. Were you able to get close to Newt Gingrich and Tom DeLay?
I was very close to Newt Gingrich, and Newt...
But he is really accessible. He sends me a Christmas card every year.
and he really... Newt Gingrich took care of me. He made me vice chairman of a full committee in the first 90 days. Tom DeLay was a problem. I was a deputy whip. I, as far as getting close to Tom DeLay, I would see him every single day. I was one of the 13 deputy whips. I did actually resign twice because I knew he was so furious with me, and then he didn't accept the resignation. Anyway, but with my motive with Abramoff, and I can tell you this directly, my motive with Abramoff was not to get access to DeLay, but to get favor with DeLay. I was not in good favor with Tom DeLay, which is a difference from access.
Would Abramoff have been as successful without his ties to Tom DeLay, do you think?
I don't think so. No, Bob would know better than I, but I think that was the key relationship that allowed Abramoff to become successful.
Abramoff, and Alex Wright is right, it's about access. There was no secret in D.C. If you wanted to get to Tom DeLay, you need to not talk to his wife or don't talk to any of his family. Talk to Jack Abramoff. That's the quickest way. No secret. And Jack made it no secret.
And what about Grover Norquist? What role did he play in Abramoff's success?
Well, in terms of his lobbying success, Grover did two things. One is he became kind of the chief propagandist. He had these things called Wednesday meetings, where there's sort of strategy sessions for different parts of the Republican Party to talk about what they might do. Interestingly and mysteriously, Jack's clients figured rather prominently in those Wednesday meetings. For suddenly, some reason out of the blue, Wednesday meetings were consumed with talking about the Northern Marianas Islands.
And nobody had ever heard of them before that.
Where were they?
Had you ever heard of them?
No.
And you didn't run your first political campaign saying, I'm going to do something to help the Northern Marianas Islands.
I probably would have campaigned against them, actually, where I came from.
Yeah, so suddenly Saipan and Rota and Tinian were up front. And then suddenly Indian casinos became a big conservative issue in these Wednesday meetings. It was odd the way they were all Abramoff clients.
We'll return to our conversation with Alex Gibney and former Congressman Bob Ney in just a moment. Stay with us. We're back with Alex Gibney, whose latest film, Casino Jack and the United States of Money, opens this Friday at the Lincoln Plaza and Sunshine Cinemas. He is here to talk about this film, which is about Jack Abramoff. And also with us is Bob Ney, former Republican congressman from Ohio, who knows something about Jack Abramoff, maybe more than he wishes he had. Alex, what was Abramoff able to accomplish for his client, the Northern Marianas Islands?
Well, he was able to prevent the federal government from taking over immigration and labor laws there. They had put in some rather bizarre local laws that allowed them to import Chinese and Filipino labor and lowered the minimum wage rather significantly so that they could have a system there which was supposed to work if it had been done properly. But ultimately, it became very corrupt, and you had a kind of sweatshops would almost be too kind a word for what they were. And they had but the key was, because they came from the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas, you could say made in the USA about the clothing, and it frustrated a lot of trade tariffs.
Weren't they done in to some degree by new trade agreements the United States made?
Ultimately, they were done in by those trade agreements. But, I mean, they stayed in business for a long, long time with absolutely unbelievable human rights abuses because of Jack Abramoff. He was the lobbyist for the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas.
Now, he came into politics as an idealist. I suspect, Bob, that your first impulse in going to politics was also that you wanted to do what you thought was right. How do we wind up in a situation where Abramoff now has all these ways of funneling money from clients to lawmakers, think tanks, and himself? Things like, gimme five. I mean, you can't come up with something, a scheme like gimme five, without knowing that you're doing something wrong.
One of the most disturbing elements to me, and it's portrayed in a film, and it's a great, Alex Gibney did a great job with it. When I see to this day, when I talk about the give me five, the troglodytes, that part of it, no matter what anybody thinks of what all happened, is just one of the most repulsive, revolting things.
Did you know all about it at the time? Were you totally aware of how it all worked?
No. I had absolutely no idea. I was not on the inside of that. When these were revealed in the newspapers, and when I see it on the big screen, you know, I've seen this wonderful film a couple of times. I'll see it again tonight. When I see it on a big screen, it still makes me tingle in a bad way. I really can't believe, at the end of the day, anybody making that amount of money, frankly, if you pay me that amount of money, I'm going to say nice things about you, either to your face or behind your back. And these were not nice things.
Well, part of the problem was that there were so many things to make people feel good. I mean, he had a restaurant, didn't he?
It was a scheme. Signatures, I frequented. In fact, that's what's got me in trouble, too. I frequented.
Was the food that good?
Food was terrible. Seriously.
It was just simply a place to be because other powerful people were there?
The sushi was great, but the food literally was not that good, but it was a place to be. If you went in there, I would have to, if I wanted to drink, you have to shove the Bush staff from the White House. You had to shove them out of the way to get up to the bar. But it was the place to be. If you were a Republican, you could go there. You could see Karl Rove. You could see Tom DeLay. I know all these people deny they were ever there, but you could see them all.
The president claimed that he'd never met Abramoff, even though there are official White House photos that show them talking.
Well, you know, president's memory sometimes is a little bit...
I mean, that was President Bush.
He was one of the biggest... He, being Jack Abramoff, was one of the biggest fundraisers for W. And there's no way he didn't know who Jack Abramoff was. He knew him very well.
He knew.
Now, what were you convicted of, finally, Bob?
I pled, actually. And what I pled to was honest fee for services. When they can't get you with bribery, they get you for honest fee for services. So I pled honest fee for services and the falsification of a document. That's my plan.
And it wouldn't have happened if you hadn't known Jack Abramoff?
No, it wouldn't have. It was directly linked to Jack Abramoff.
So how did you meet? Did you approach him, or did he approach you?
With other people. You know, there was no other people that were drug into my mess.
How did you meet? Did he come to you, or did you go to him?
No, actually, Neil Volz, and this is not to blame things on Neil. I want to make that crystal clear.
Neil Volz was one of your aides.
He was my chief of staff. He came from Ohio with me. Neil met Jack, and then he said, boy, this is a guy that really it's a good guy to meet. And it's nothing harmful of what Neil said. That's the way D.C. is. Hey, Jack Abramoff's a good guy to meet. It's going to help me in leadership in the future and also help me around some prickly problems with Tom DeLay that I had because I was a Republican Union squish in Tom's mind. So having said that, Neil introduced me. Then Neil eventually went to work for Jack. So there's the trifecta of of problems for Neil and I both. We were all connected.
Is it common practice for the staff of congressmen to consort with the lobbyists? Is that where most of the connecting is done?
Oh, it's beyond. Revolving Door is bigger than Macy's here in New York. And the fact of the constant connections and interlocking, until now everybody's a little bit nervous, it was constant. It was a way of life.
But if, as you say, everyone was doing what you did for Abramoff, why were you the only one who went to jail?
I'm asked that question a lot. Here's,
for good reason. You know, it's a good question.
Here's my it is. That's, you know, my parents have asked me this and family. But it's like anything. If you're convicted of selling drugs, and I say, well, what are you arresting me for? My neighbor's selling drugs. That's irrelevant. So in this case,
two wrongs don't make a right.
In this case, I crossed the line. I also think there were some perfect storms that happened with me that came into play with
I'll
it.
I'll tell you,
but to answer your question, and I answer it always this way, and you'll get the facetiousness. I was the only one. I ran the entire Capitol. Sorry. I was the dictator. I was more powerful than the speaker. I'm the only one that did anything.
Well, often in these situations, somebody winds up being convicted, and then we move on. You know, that's what happened with My Lai. There were so many people who were involved, but one person went to jail for a couple of months.
And this is what I believe. Yes, I did things that were wrong. But I think once I went away and Jack went away, guess what? It went away till this movie.
Did you ever question what Neil Volz and Abramoff were telling you?
Yes. And in fact, at one point in time, I said to Neil, you knew, didn't you? And there's a scene in there where I believe he knew, and he was a liar, and I left a terrible message, which Neil and I have made up on his voice machine. But there was a time I thought he knew the whole spectrum. Today, I don't believe that Neil knew every bit and piece of what Jack was doing. Jack was a chameleon who could change colors depending on who was in the room, whether it was with Neil or me or you or Tom DeLay or anybody.
My guests are Bob Ney, former Republican congressman from Ohio, now a talk show host, Alex Gibney, whose latest film is Casino Jack and the United States of Money. It opens this Friday at the Lincoln Plaza and Sunshine Cinemas. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lippitt. You're having a special screening tonight?
Yeah, special screening tonight. And after the screening, Bob will be there. Neil Volz is former chief of staff. And also Adam Kadan, who is Abramoff's partner in crime on the Sun Cruise deal that ultimately ended up with a mob hit. So it should be an interesting evening.
The mob hit is something that you actually dramatize in the film. Did you feel that was necessary in a documentary?
I thought so. I mean, in a way, it was a way of, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I start the film out with a quote from Jack Abramoff. He says, documentary, you don't want to do a documentary. You want to make an action film. Well, so to have a bit of fun.
You should have had Dolph Lundgren playing him.
He wouldn't return my calls, and I had women in my office call him because he was more responsive to women. But he wouldn't agree. Anyway, we dramatized one sequence, which was a mob hit, but then quickly ratcheted into real life. I just felt that that was a way of creating a bit of fun around that movie idea, but also giving some sense viscerally of how brutal ultimately this recklessness became. You know, it led to a place that was not such a nice place.
Did Abramoff operate differently from other Washington lobbyists?
Yes and no, I would say. I mean, I think he was reckless. He was careless, and he did stuff that was over the top. But there was a lot of stuff that he did was in very much in the mainstream. I don't know what you would say about that, Bob.
But it was in the mainstream, but Jack took it to another level of aggressiveness.
Do you think that his motivations for doing what he did came out of real convictions?
I believe in the beginning that it was convictions. I believe that to this day, I think he feels probably, I haven't talked with him, but I think he feels that he still did a lot of correct things. It got out of control, and pretty soon you wonder, you know, if you're looking at somebody else's body as you're doing these things. Same with me.
Well, you said that you relied on him to get you access, in this case, to Tom DeLay. But you were an assistant whip, which means that you were one of only how many people in the House?
Well, there was 13 whips on the Republican side. I was chairman of a full committee.
Well, there are hundreds and hundreds of people in the House. That automatically makes you a part of the in crowd, doesn't it? Well, what about getting committee chairmanships?
Tom DeLay was it. Number one, because if you weren't on the right side of him, that velvet hammer could become a steel hammer and end up in the middle of your skull politically. So he was the guy. More powerful, frankly, than especially Speaker Hastert. Way more powerful than the Speaker.
He also dispensed money. I mean, that was he got people to raise money for him, but he also dispensed money. If you needed to get elected, he would dispense it, and if you couldn't get the money, you wouldn't get elected.
He must have read Robert Caro's book about Lyndon Johnson, because that's how Lyndon Johnson gained power initially, and that probably is the best way to gain power in Washington, to dispense the money. But also there were these other things that Abramoff was offering that I would think that many members of Congress and staffers couldn't hope to achieve: the golf trips, the free meals, and seats in skyboxes. I don't know. What else did he give?
It was the total picture. It was the total package, whether it was a drink, you could go get something to eat. And not that
– and good sushi, you said.
But there were other people. There were other lobbyists who had skyboxes. I mean, that was not –
And restaurants.
So looking back, how much do you think you were influenced by the gifts that Abramoff could bestow on you?
Well, this will sound like a funny way to answer this. Not very much. Not very much. There were a couple of things. I first of all, believed, and this is, I want to paraphrase this by saying, I did wrong things. This is not a blame game here for me today, okay?
Because if we see other people in the film, like Tom DeLay, he will defend everything he ever did.
No, you
are the exception.
I won't defend it. And I did some absolutely wrong things, and apologies to the Indian Nation and a lot of people. But having said that, there was not a tit for tat where Jack was very smart. It wasn't like, here, why don't you do some meals? Why don't you do this, and then you can do this for me? Those types of things didn't occur. Would I give up a career of 24 years that I fought so dramatically to achieve for a trip to Scotland when I honestly didn't even golf? No. But that's what happened. Because you just – here's the bottom line of it, and it happens in D.C. today, it happened at that time, and it will happen tomorrow morning in Washington, D.C., where it's, well, that's not really important. I'm not really doing anything too wrong. So I took a meal. So I went on a trip. So what? So I got a contribution. So what? Well, those so whats add up to a real problem, and that's why we need a change with campaign finance.
I've asked journalists about their personal relations with the people that they cover, and they say, well, I'm objective. I'm a professional. And – I know that's not true. Once you've developed some kind of a relationship with somebody, everything changes.
I have played card games with journalists. I have paid them cash winnings when they have won games. And if they want to dispute that, I'll be glad to say their name someday.
Yeah, no, relationships are tricky. And the one thing, you know, I visited Jack Abramoff in prison. And the one thing he said to me that I found very interesting was, he said, don't overplay the money. It's about relationships. Now, I think money has a lot to do with the way those relationships work. But I think that that's the currency, ultimately, is you get people, you know, on trips together, doing this or that. And the next thing, you know, how about doing this for me? Would that be okay? Sure, no problem.
Now, he talked to you, but he doesn't appear on camera for you, although he appears a lot in the film because he made a lot of personal appearances that were filmed. Why do you think he wouldn't cooperate in that way?
Well, he did agree to do, and then for a while the Department of Justice kept us out when it seemed clear that we were going to get in with our cameras. Mysteriously, he changed his mind, and I was told that it was due to pressure from the Department of Justice, both carrots and sticks.
I was in prison. I would not even answer his letter when he wrote to me. Let me just put it that way.
And why was that? Are you afraid it might hurt you?
I was absolutely, yeah. Nothing to do with Mr. Gibney. I looked up his work later and decided he was a good person to tell a story. Fear. Mm-hmm. For myself.
From the prison officials?
Repercussions.
They might have kept you in longer.
I might have ended up in a place much smaller than the area I was living in. It's called a shoe, solitary confinement.
But 17 months has got to be rough no matter what. And some people serve a lot. How long is Jack Abramoff in for?
4 years.
4 years.
He is coming out to a halfway house in June.
Now, was it hard getting Tom DeLay to cooperate?
Well, here's one of the great mysteries that one can take advantage of, since everybody's in search of publicity. He was on his book tour. So when you're on a book tour, people interview you. We interviewed him. Oh, your book. Very interesting. How about Jack Abramoff?
Alex also told me he might be a good dancer. I heard that through the grapevine.
Yes, well, dancing with his appearance in Dancing with the Stars is on the film. I must say it is a very impressive turn.
Did this scandal expose any new problems with the system of campaign finance? I'm thinking, of course, about what's going to happen now as a result of the Supreme Court ruling that corporations and unions can spend as much as they want on political ads. Do you think that that's something that Jack Abramoff could have taken advantage of?
Oh, sure. He would have taken huge advantage of it. But, in an interesting way, we look at Jack as what he did was an exaggeration of the way the system works. But I think in some ways he was a small timer compared to the role that, say, the lobbyists for the financial industry play, or the role that the lobbyists for the pharmaceutical industry play. Pharmas is they're masterful. They pay everybody.
And you, as a congressman, you were getting some generous contributions from people you knew wanted to influence your vote. And it would have been hard to make a serious run if you didn't get that money. I can't believe that it doesn't affect not just you, but pretty much everybody in Congress.
Well, sure. Pharma's the best example. They do it right. When they buy the White House, the House, the Senate, Democrat, Republican. They get them all. They leave nobody untouched. I mean, it's really a force. When I say buy, I'm not saying cash and envelopes, but the influence and the tactics. It's absolutely amazing. It's a whole game out there. You have to raise money. If you don't raise money, you can't stay in office. You can't have your vision. You can't work with what you want unless you raise the money and you kowtow to the leaders.
Some say that the Supreme Court ruling brings transparency to the corporate financing of politics. What do you think?
Well, the Supreme Court ruling, in some ways, frankly, I would have been okay with part of the ruling. It went too far, though. But it parallels and makes a citizen in the same limelight as a corporation. That's a problem. Look, I opposed John McCain. Remember, John McCain was going to clean up the system and he was going to reduce money. He did no such thing. This is
all. And now he's disavowed what he did do.
Well, he's not a maverick. And so this is, this is all a smokescreen. This is all a dog and pony show. Four years ago, if I was on this show, I would have told you campaign financing is a joke, it's ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. I've changed because if you look at the system, if you look at this movie, one should wake up to the fact that, Abramoff might have been in prison. I was in prison. Nothing has changed in a lot of ways.
Bob, are you still a Republican?
I'm recovering Republican. I'm recovering.
Do you miss Washington?
I work for Ellen Ratner, one of the most liberal people in this country. Wonderful. Do I miss? I go back to D.C. I've been treated better than I deserve. A lot of great friends, both sides of the aisle. But no, I don't miss it too much.
Does Abramoff take any responsibility for what he did? Does he feel he got a raw deal?
He told me that he felt that he did take responsibility, that, what he pled guilty to, he was genuinely sorry for, and he pled guilty because he believed he did something wrong. Now, Jack says a lot of things to a lot of people, but I believe, it's prison, affects you. So I think he's cowed.
But you would think religion would affect you as well. He's a deeply religious man, and a number of the other people involved are religious as well, in a number of different religions. Religion definitely teaches us certain moral values. How do these people reconcile?
I think before I started this film, I thought it was ironic that certain deeply religious people like Ralph Reed or Jack Abramoff or Tom DeLay could do immoral things. I don't think it's ironic now. I think it's part of the package. It's part of a psychological process that sometimes people go through where they think, gee, if I'm good and I'm really on a mission and I'm devout, how can I do anything that's bad? It's a peculiar...
So if I bend the rules, I'm bending the rules only for the greater good.
Correct. And that's what leads you into trouble.
And Alex is right, because when I looked at Jack Abramoff, and again, this is not to say, the devil made me do it, et cetera, I take blame. But when I looked at Jack Abramoff, I found it hard to believe that what he told me wasn't true, because he was orthodox, and you had to watch actually some of the things you said in front of him, some of the verbiage you watched, don't cuss too much, don't overdrink too much, et cetera, because he's a man of God. He's a religious guy.
Which is ironic considering the obscenity-laden emails that Jack sent back and forth with Mike Scanlon. Obviously, you didn't need to be so cautious.
I didn't read those.
I want to thank both of you for being on our show. Alex Gibney is the filmmaker responsible for Casino Jack and the United States of Money, which opens this Friday at the Lincoln Plaza and Sunshine Cinemas. Bob Ney is the former Republican representative from Ohio who now is conducting a talk show and may wind up doing something else in the near future.
That's right.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.